I'm Trudy Dempsey and this is Lead a Horse to Water, the podcast for everyone interested in horse behaviour and training. I'm a certified and accredited behaviour consultant in the UK and you can find me at equine.training. I'm a teacher of horses and their humans both in person and online. You can find my courses at understandhorses.com. My latest interactive 7-week positive reinforcement training course has sold out. But if you're listening after April 2021, then the course will open once more this year. So make sure to sign up to Understand Horses and avoid missing out. On with the podcast. Today, I'm joined on the podcast by Claire Young. Claire is currently studying equine behaviour with the Natural Animal Centre and is hoping to be accepted on a master's course to study clinical animal behaviour. Claire cares for her horse Brie, which is short for Blackberry rather than that smelly French cheese, and her two cats. You can find her brilliant page, Kindly Equine, on Facebook and Instagram, and I really suggest you take a look. I first met Claire when she began training equines with positive reinforcement and I travelled to meet her in Hampshire. Since then, I've come to know her as the queen of learning environments. She is meticulous at setting up her learners for success and strives to create comfortable and fun learning opportunities. Welcome, Claire.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. And as usual, I'm going to ask, it's your first visit to the podcast, I'm going to ask you to tell us a little bit about how you got into horses, animals, positive reinforcement, and yeah, just give us a bit of background on who Claire is.
Yeah, so horses first came into my life when I was a child. No one else in my family has any interest in horses whatsoever. They're pretty terrified of them. But I managed to sort of pluck up the confidence to say, Mum, I want to do something a bit different. So off I went to, we had an RAF saddle club near us where we lived. So there were different horses there at different times, depending on who was at the base and things. They did some lessons for children. Off I go. I did that probably for about 2 years, but I fell off as much as I stayed on. luckily, as a child, you just kind of bounce and roll and get back up again. I was the tallest of our group. There were five of us girls that were riding in our little kind of kids group, and I was the tallest. And obviously, because it was an RAF saddle club, the horses that were there were based on whoever was keeping their horse there at the time and gave them permission to use them for their kiddies lessons. So we had this ex-race horse. He had some time at Newmarket and then he went lame. So he found himself there. And because I was the tallest, I always had to ride him. To be honest, I had no idea what I was doing. You know, you get told about pony club kicks and pulling on the reins, and that's really about it. So of course, bless him, he was excitable and had a mind of his own. So we'd whiz round the school completely out of control. We'd get to a corner and I couldn't stay on anymore and off I'd go. It was fun, but it was also, you know, looking back on it now as an adult, you think, crikey, I can see why my mum used to sort of be panicked every time she dropped me off, hoping I'd come back in one piece. I became interested in, as any young adolescent girl does, I became interested in boys. So I decided that I didn't have any time for horses because I had my first boyfriend. My mum never liked horses. And to be honest, I don't think she, you know, as lots of mums would feel, oh my goodness, first boyfriend. So that was my choice. So no more horse riding. Then I didn't come back to it until I was in my late 20s. So probably about 4 years ago now. I had very much thought horses would not be part of my life at all. But I found myself every time, you know, every time I went past a horse in a paddock, I was like, oh, got to stop and see them and just watch them. I was fascinated. So I suppose, as most people do, you come to horses to ride them. So off I go to riding schools again. Toured various different riding schools looking for, I didn't know what I was looking for, but I knew that I wasn't getting whatever it was. I just felt a real affinity to the horses, and I really loved them, and riding them didn't seem like we were really showing them much love. And I didn't really feel that I was any further along than when I'd been that child, just kind of hoping for the best and falling off. I still had someone standing in the middle of arena shouting at me. The only difference was it cost a lot more these days. So I sort of, I toured the riding schools. I then, I tried a place where the horses were trained in classical dressage. Luckily they took beginners, because obviously I wasn't going to be doing any classical dressage. But still kind of thought, this just doesn't, you know, we are literally sometimes using what I now know is positive punishment, and still a lot of escalating pressure that's sometimes applied with actually no logic and timing is just kind of thrown around. So I said to my instructor, I actually want to do some groundwork. I don't want to be riding. And then I'm sure, as a lot of people then find, once they're doing focusing on groundwork, they start to hear about natural horsemanship. And obviously, you know, you think natural, that sounds good.
It's good, yeah.
And then I had this absolutely lovely cob that was always used for my lessons, because she was just very, very patient. She was so gorgeous. And I was just like getting her to do the game with the carrot stick, where she has to move away from me and then come back in. And I was also really uncoordinated as well. So I was trying to learn how to manage this long rope and this carrot stick. I spent as much time actually tapping and hitting myself with this carrot stick flying around as I did actually applying that pressure to the horse.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't like this. How can she like it? And obviously it's talked about in terms of the relationship and things. And I, you know, we have to be very careful in terms of any anthropomorphisms, but there are elements of looking as well at your own life and relationships. And I thought, none of them involve anything of what we're doing to these horses. It just didn't seem to make sense. And so I had then a break from all of that. And then did some volunteer work with rescue charities, so that I could do something where I was spending time with horses and helping them, but feet firmly on the ground, and got the opportunity to then share a horse that was ridden with a bitless bridle and was also barefoot. So those things were new to me, and again I thought, okay, maybe, you know, certainly this is the level of kind of awareness and compassion for the animal's needs and welfare that I hadn't come across before. And rode him a few times, and obviously realized again, like, you know, I was still very much at the kind of like beginner phase. So I knew that, you know, if I was going to feel sort of confident, then I would need someone to help me, and really started to learn, oh, what all of this stuff is either negative reinforcement, positive punishment, or flooding. I at this point, we had adopted two rescue cats, and I'd never had cats before. I hadn't really had many animals as a child. My parents were really into they're keen sailors, so we were always like going off down the west coast to go on 6-week sailing trips in the summer holidays. So you couldn't really have an animal unless you'd got someone to look after it for you. So I didn't really have much experience when we got the cats, but my husband had had cats before. And I took them to the vets the first time. A few vet trips in, and I thought we were going to get like blacklisted, because my lovely little cat, Smudge, bless her, she was drawing a lot of blood from all of these lovely veterinary professionals. That's where I found a book called The Trainable Cat by Sarah Ellis and John Bradshaw. And that's where I found clicker training, because of course people, you know, you can't herd a cat as such. So people have had to think about, you know, different ways of training them. And then I started to look into, actually, could that maybe be something that I could do with the horse I was sharing? And then I found you and we had our, you know, I had a real, you know, proper, well, you can learn. I totally think being self-taught is amazing. But there is, I think, really something to be said for an expert coming to see you in your environment with your horse. And as you were saying as well, I am quite particular about environment. So having that kind of expert eye is just so important. And then I got the opportunity, I met Bree, I was helping out her owners, and then they were going to sell her, and I didn't really want to see her go. So yeah, we sort of found each other, and then the rest is kind of history.
No, I think it's fantastic. And you know, when I met you, you were somebody who took everything I suggested and ran with it. You know, very often clients, I might nudge clients a little bit to, you know, can you set this up better? I didn't have to do any of that with you. You were like, oh yeah, I've researched that, and I've done that with bells on it, you know. And it's so refreshing to find somebody. And it was difficult for you because you were in a situation with a lone horse, and you know, it's not your place and the control is gone. And it's a balance. In one way it's easier because you can walk away at the end of the day or the end of the training session. On the other hand, it's more difficult because ultimately you have no control. And I think, yeah, it's tough. And anybody out there who has a lone horse and is wanting to try positive reinforcement and they haven't got full 100% care of that horse, I think it's a really tough one. I think it's a question that we're asked a lot, you know, can I do this? Is it okay for me to do it and the owner or the other sharer or carer to not do it? And where do I stand? And it's quite difficult. And that kind of leads us nicely into the topic of today's podcast, because although it's lovely to hear you know, your story, and I don't think I've ever heard it I always get a client history when we start together, but you know, that much detail is really lovely to know, you know, where you came from. And I'm imagining wonderful sailing holidays now and how wonderful it would be to have parents who sailed.
I actually didn't think it was so wonderful because I wanted to be left at the stables.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? I mean, my dad rode when I was a kid and I used to go out riding with him, and I was always embarrassed, and that's awful. I look back now and think how lucky I was, but at the time I was like, no Dad, you go out with someone else, I don't want to go out with you. It's just terrible. But you know, yeah, we all feel our own lot is not, you know, as
yeah,
perfect.
There's yeah, many long-suffering parents out there who
I'm sure, yeah,
hopefully as their children grow older they will look back and be much more grateful.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember absolutely taking mine up a very steep hill on Exmoor, and her just behind me, her dad right at the top, and her saying, if I ever have children, I will never make them do this. Very dramatic. And you know, now we laugh about it, but you know, yeah, it's tough. You know, you do things, and mainly you do them for your family health, and then yeah, your kids aren't grateful. How dare they.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's the same with horses. So yeah, the main thrust of today's podcast is really the beginner trainer. Mm-hmm. And you know, we've loosely put some ideas together, which I know you're going to have great ideas on, because you always do. But you know, the one thing that I think is the hardest for people is out there now. When I first started, nobody did it. I mean, literally the internet had hardly begun. I don't think it even had right at the beginning, and because I'm that old. And then there were people, but I think there was only people like Alex Kurland or Karen Pryor doing it with dogs at the time. And so it was minimal. Mainly it was learning on the job. And now, gosh, there's so many places to go look. So where do we send somebody? What do you think is the hardest thing to decide? And when you first start looking, where do you get your information? Because I know you've looked at different places. I don't expect people to come to me and be, oh gosh, I'm only going to do it that way. That would be crazy. You have learned from experience, there is some great places to find information, either books or online or groups or whatever. So what are your thoughts, Claire?
I personally find that I find it very reinforcing to work closely with someone who can mentor me. It's always been, whilst I am very much read around things and try and research things, I just find it such a comfort to have, booked in the diary when you've got your next visit from Trudy. And that's just really, really helpful, because as well, those sorts of, when you're first starting out and there is now so much information out there that it can be overwhelming. So sometimes you do, if we think about it in terms of like errorless learning and providing a guide for our horses, having someone in person that is a guide for you just means sometimes that you can let go of some of the enormous amounts of information you may have absorbed and actually just apply something. And also sometimes just to stick with it. I think, when I first started, I was trying a lot of different things and I was hopping around all different kind of setups and looking at my environment and then sort of sometimes changing things almost too quickly. So it's really helpful to just have someone that kind of can keep you in check. And I can very much a kind of recovered clinical perfectionist. So it also helps to kind of keep that element in check, because if you think and delve into it too much, then it is overwhelming, and also then it's not fun. And the main reason I came to positive reinforcement with horses is as a way of having fun with horses, because I didn't find it fun to use pressure myself. And when I say pressure, I mean, obviously there's all different levels of pressure, and there's some fantastic work out there with negative reinforcement where people are using the lightest of pressure. But I was coming from somewhere where I'd kind of, been aware of the, sorry to bring it up again, but the natural horsemanship stuff, which has got a lot of marketing around it. It's just something, and it's sold as this kind of one size fits all. And you're not really taught the learning theory behind what you're actually doing. And so I had come from that, which then meant I really wanted to understand what I was doing. But I also initially got bogged down and therefore lost that element of fun. And I knew how fun it could be because of what I was doing with my cats. And simply because with the cats, we share a home with, everyone's in different situations with their horses, but a lot of people, they haven't got their horses at home with them. They are there when they're there at the yard, and then you don't really know what's going on the rest of the time sometimes. So training with our horses can almost take on this more formal kind of training session approach, whereas of course the stuff I do with the cats, because they're here all the time, I'd just be capturing little things here and there, and accidentally taught them a little trick of how to sit down just by capturing it, because it happens anyway. So I think that I now try and approach it from a variety of different angles, which is firstly making sure I've got the right people around me. And I'm going to use a pun here, but you've got to find someone you click with.
I think that is massively important, and it works both ways. You know, sometimes I'll meet a client and I just know there's somebody better for them. You know, we're just not that, and that shouldn't be an issue. There really is so much work to go around. I find it very frustrating that we don't help each other. You know, I started a page that is literally a list of clicker trainers that will actually make visits to people's homes. And honestly, it's really disappointing. So few people have come forward to put themselves on that list. I'm not checking anything. I'm not checking any qualifications. That's going to be up to the person that looks for the help. But I think it's really important that we stop worrying that, oh, it's my business and you're going to be taking business off me. Yeah, you know, I traveled to you a long way, mm-hmm. and quite a lot of my clients, I travel a long way, and I could look for clients closer and will do when I haven't got so far to travel. So, you know, it's a difficult one, but there is plenty of work out there. And I think we need to stop thinking that we have the answers for every client. Maybe we don't. Maybe we don't have that experience, or maybe we just don't gel. You know, I mean, I think the moment I met you, it felt comfortable, and it felt that you really wanted to try some of the things that I might think are a little bit nerdy. Not everybody would want to try, and that's fabulous, because you don't have many clients like that. You know, you have a lot of clients who they're kind of fighting the forest fire a little bit, and then you meet somebody who's absolutely taking buckets and buckets of water and keeping everything damp so the fire doesn't spread, and it is wonderful. So yeah, sorry, I butted in there, but yeah, I think for you, I think it's been a great help having, you know, hands-on somebody to see you through that part of your journey. And then it might be that other people get involved in that as time goes on, and you know, we all mellow into different people and different trainers, and then pick up help elsewhere. And I think that's how it should work, isn't it?
Yeah,
so I can't even remember how you would have found me. Was that just on the internet?
I found you through specific personal recommendation from Justine Harrison.
Oh, right.
Yes. Yeah, so I went to talk with Justine in the days before coronavirus. And we could, it was over at, I forget the name of the, there's an equine college in Guildford. I forget its name now. I should know. I don't live so close anymore. And I went along, and it was about equine behaviour. I couldn't stop taking notes. And I loved the whole evening. And I went to speak to Justine at the end, and I said, I would like to look at learning how to use positive reinforcement. Obviously, specifically at the time, it was the clicker training, which again is really just a term for a set of tools you can use within positive reinforcement. And I said, you know, who could you recommend? And Justine said, there are lots of people out there, but I wouldn't recommend anyone other than Trudy.
Aww.
So I then, and I remember Justine saying, I mean, Trudy's not nearby, but I felt at the time I didn't have Brie. I had my lone horse. So I suppose I did feel, I think there's a certain element of responsibility as well in terms of really seeking high quality help with our horses, because, you know, our horses, so many of them are completely micromanaged in their domesticated environment. They, you know, it really is such a gift to have an equine in your life. Obviously, at the same time, you have to kind of work within, you know, obviously everyone has kind of boundaries and constraints, but wherever possible, I do think the more quality tuition and information, it ultimately is your horse that benefits. And and you benefit as well then through that relationship and through things being easier, because yeah. you know, good training makes things easier.
So
I then looked at your website and then thought, oh my goodness, Trudy is not nearby, is she? But then I got in touch with you and you were like, yes, I can come and see you. So I was like, do you know what? I think it's just, I didn't know of Justine prior to going to this talk. I mean, it was kind of the beginnings of this kind of even hearing the term equine behavior, an equine behaviorist. You're at a riding school or a livery yard, and that even just the term of horse behavior is not used, you know. Behavior sadly is often described with labels such as, you know, bolshy, bargy, naughty,
all the things we don't want, rather than
exactly
focusing on the what we do want.
Bomb proof, that gets used a lot. So it was really my kind of first awareness of this, but I then obviously looked at, you know, Justine has written some amazing, really easy to understand, written in layman's terms, articles on all sorts of things in different mainstream horse magazines. Had to look at all of that and was like, it made sense. And I felt that it was incredibly trustworthy source of information.
But it's interesting because you felt that, and yet when I see those mainstream magazine articles and I think, yeah, fantastic, there's one she's contributed to the in this most recent British Horse Society magazine, and you know, I think, oh, good, people are going to take note of this, and I know that people will be nodding along when they're reading it, and then they go to the yard and do something completely different. And, you know, for those people just trying to get off that treadmill of everybody at my yard does the same thing. You know, sometimes if I get asked to go to a yard as a behaviorist, I'm asked to go at a time of day when there'll be nobody else there. People do not want, especially men, do not want anybody to know that they feel that their horse needs some behavioral intervention. So, yeah, I suppose what we're saying is, if you're just starting out and you want help off that treadmill a little bit, then finding that right person. And of course, anybody that's listening, the Animal Behaviour and Training Council, my own certification with the IAABC. And as always, these links are in the show notes or on my website anyway. But, you know, they're always great places to start, because just because somebody's certified doesn't mean they're fabulous. It doesn't mean you're going to be the right fit with them, but hopefully it gives you an idea that they've got their learning and their knowledge to a certain standard. So if people look for that, at the same way, just because somebody says they're a clicker trainer doesn't necessarily mean that they just do clicker training. They might be adding it to their natural horsemanship, and that might be just what you're looking for right now. Doesn't mean we're being sniffy about it. It just means that's where, you know, that person might be right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And when I was first looking into things, I remember actually talking to someone via a sort of a messaging thing on Facebook, and kind of I had been going through this process of kind of realization of getting help from a few different people, some just sort of chatting remotely and then others in person, and realizing clicker trainer isn't like this stamp of necessarily high welfare, and it has become this kind of term then that is kind of, you know, because it's gained so much traction, and it's a brilliant thing when it's done well, but also it can be done terribly, you know, much the same as any of the four learning quadrants that you're using. They can be applied in a way that is completely inappropriate and can create enormous levels of frustration. And there can be some situations where I personally have seen things where I've thought, you know, I think it would be much more ethical to use some really good negative reinforcement here, because in this situation, this horse is just, it doesn't know what it's being asked. It's desperate to get the food. It doesn't know what the right answer is, or the reinforcement level is like so low that it's just so frustrating. All these kind of, you know, when these, the, you know, social media is one of those things where it's a curse and a blessing, but you can see amazing videos which look incredible where, like, you know, this horse is, you know, now following this target so that it can lunge at liberty, and, you know, isn't this amazing? And then you actually look at the horse and you see pin back ears, and you can see so much stress through the face, and, you know, you've got those triangular eyes, and you're like, actually. And then you may see the same horse ridden in, or groundwork in a more traditional, perhaps equitation science, those sorts of things, where actually they would be a lot calmer because they know exactly what's being asked for them, and they have that control over their environment. They know how to release the pressure.
It's a great point, because when we first start out, we can have such a lack of knowledge and skills that we can be standing there in front of a horse with food, which is like a big flag to ask me for it, and then the horse is just doing handstands trying to get it, and we're just stood there going, help, I don't quite know what to do here. So there are, you know, definitely different places to go to look for information, and we would say social media is not a bad place, but that you'll get maybe 20 different opinions on what. So if you're a new person to this kind of training, you say, okay, I want to go out and start this. 10 people put their websites and say, I do online training, which is great. But how do you choose between those? Well, I think we've more or less covered the idea that you're going to have to do a bit of digging and see if that person feels like the right fit for you, and ask other people, and things like, you know, just generally watching videos that they might be able to share with you, and read articles that they've written. And then it's just a case of diving in and getting started. And I think that tells you a lot about the person you're going to train with, or I don't like the word system, because it isn't necessarily a system or a method. It's tends for me to be more of an ethos. When we start that training, are there some things that you think now, looking back, especially with your work with Bree, that you would consider those essential first port of call? You know, where do I really want to look? And if somebody comes to me and says, hey, let's get, you know, trotting around or something in my first session, are they doing the right thing for me and my horse, or should I be looking at someone else?
I would say, from my experience, and then also trying to gain information from individuals which have got certain levels of accreditation, such as IABC and those sorts of things. Where to start is very much, sometimes it's something as well that you don't ask yourself until you've already started. I would definitely say, if I had my time again, I think that, like, oh, you think you have to go and get all the kit? You think you have to get yourself a target stick? And if you get yourself a bum bag, don't get it until, in fact, like, there's so much in terms of, like, learning about, if we are going to use a marker in our positive reinforcement training, and we are going to use, say, a food delivery system, you know, what kind of bag you're going to wear, or is it actually going to be a bucket you go and get some food from, those sorts of things. I remember you saying to me, practice in front of a mirror. Don't go anywhere near your horse until you've sorted this out. Recently, now that I'm currently at home, which is a whole nother story, but I've got a lot of time on my hands at home. So I've been doing an online Karen Pryor course with my cats. And as boring as it can be, it was so lovely to see that the first thing you do is simply just practice your clean clicker mechanics in terms of not moving any other part of your body before that click and then the hand to bag. Don't hover. And there's a lot of different things out there. I mean, I know some people, it was suggested to me, and it was something I tried initially, was actually having my hand in the bag ready. Then you think, okay, but actually, again, it can just, in terms of the environment, draw attention to what is about to happen when we want our horse to be focusing on the behavior that's happening right there and then, and little things like that. So I think that actually the best place to start is without your animal.
That's such a brilliant point.
So important. And it is really difficult, and I'm not gonna lie, I skipped a few little bits of that at the beginning. I was like, oh, I know how to do it that. But I think also as well, then thinking about different food delivery systems. I mean, we've talked about how then there's actually that chain of after the click, how the food is delivered. And that's that like reinforcement chain. And your learner needs to learn what that is in order to keep frustration low, because it's all about predictability for our learner. That's how we get the cleanest training. So, I mean, it's things like, for example, with my cats, I've actually changed. I've actually decided, I tried a few different, had different pouches. I've tried sometimes using dry food. There's things where being able to throw them a piece of kibble is really good, because it, say, for example, gets them away from a mat so that they have the opportunity to perform behavior again. But then also there's some things like I am terrible. I want to, for the cats, I want to throw down a piece of food. I can be all over the place. It can end up in the corner of the room. And then I've just got this frustrated animal that's going, oh, it's gone over there. I've got, you know, and I've lost their attention completely. I've lost the kind of timing of the session that I wanted as well, in terms of the clean kind of, here's the behavior, here's the reinforcer, here's the behavior, here's the reinforcer. Like, I lose all of that. So like with them, I've actually now started using some wet food just on a little stick, which is a really lovely thing. But it works for one of my cats really well and not for the other. The other is just like not, she doesn't like wet food as much. So also with your horse, thinking, am I going to wear the food? Is the food going to be somewhere else? Are there times, is it always hand feeding I want to do? Or is it something like, I did a few sort of experiments with Brie when we talked about, oh, I forget the lady's name, learning about dogs. What's her name?
Kay Lawrence,
And Kay Lawrence uses cup on a stick. So that's where, that's that, it is a luring element. And then the food is actually delivered from a cup on a stick and put down somewhere that maybe the horse then has to walk to get it. So is your horse going to have to move to get that food? How's that going to look? So I think actually there's just so much to consider before you go anywhere near your horse with any treats. And then I think in terms of the actual behavior to start with, for me, in terms of people where I have, again, I feel like they are up to date with the latest science-based training. With our horses, the kind of default state we want them to be in is relaxed. I mean, obviously as well, they are, you know, they are large animals, and they as I know, they can kick you really hard. So a default state of calm and relaxed until something else is cued is really important for working safely with food. And I don't want to put people off at all, because I mean, obviously sometimes people say, oh, you know, how can you use food? Because they'll just get too excited. And it's like, if you start right, with a high rate of reinforcement and a low value food in protected contact, then you don't, you know, that's not something you need to worry about, but it's always something you need to consider. So, and it's taught much the same as well. In I went on a really fantastic talk with the Horse Trust the other evening from Gemma Pearson. So she's a certified clinical animal behaviourist, and she was actually talking about with teaching the standing still, actually with a little, with some negative reinforcement, a few taps with the whip, that sort of thing. But she was stressing the importance of the first thing to teach your horse is how to just stand calmly until something else is cued. And of course, I've taught that to Bree with positive reinforcement. I think that's where sometimes the, you know, the training, what type of reinforcement you choose to use can be something that is, you've got to think about the situation, the scenario, you've got to think about what you and your horse want to do together long term. There are people where positive reinforcement isn't going to be something that fits where they are right now, and that's fine. But in terms of that default behaviour, definitely a just, as we call it, a standstill and chill.
It's like, that's our one. But yeah, I think that that's massive. But people don't really want to spend time on that early stuff. I think they see all those videos of people going out with the target, and I see that a lot. There's a couple of, well, there's one big American clicker training group that I very rarely do go on, because the posts come so thick and fast that I try not to spend my life on Facebook. But you know, there's a lot of good information in there, but there are so many posts of people saying, yeah, I've done the touch the target thing, now what do I do? And it's like, kind of, oh, I wish you hadn't started there. Maybe that what you're saying is having a calm behavior, understanding that you and your human plus food is not terribly exciting. And for years your horse has probably practiced bucket, oh, excitement, food coming, human puts it down, I get up. Yeah, so you've almost got to overcome that. And yeah, okay, you could maybe work on using scratches. And I know you've been really successful with Bree with the pasta spoon at giving her scratches, and she does love it. But there are some things that you're just probably not going to really train in positive reinforcement with scratches.
You know, yeah, absolutely. And there's some things as well where in terms of picking the saliency of the primary reinforcer you're using, there are times where you're just not going to get the number of repetitions that you're looking for of a behavior when you're first trying to teach it. Yeah. And I guess you would just be there perhaps longer than you need to be. Mm. And that's where I think, yeah, you are going to perhaps need, and your choice of then even within, you know, there's, okay, so we're going to use food in this instance as our primary reinforcer. We can break that down even further because there's all types of food. and then even thinking about, I remember when I was first kind of digging into things, and I think sometimes as well, and where I found it so important to work with people that share my kind of values about things, and also my values about how we learn as humans as well, and what is an enjoyable experience for us. There were a few people where kind of I was like, you're not going to actually be for me, because initially I did go through a phase where I think I got just bogged down, and I maybe was thinking a bit too much. But you can, in the same way as when you're with a horse and you can choose to actually ignore a behavior that's unwanted, you maybe are going to use a guide to guide them towards what you do want. Some people won't use that, and it's very much trial and error. I also think about what's the consequence for me when a trainer I'm working with explains something to me? How do I feel afterwards? And I felt there were a few situations where I felt quite down, where some people were telling me that I was just overthinking everything, like, oh, you're not going to get anywhere. Because, you know, what about these things that you actually need your horse to do? I mean, this is great that they can stand there, but that really doesn't look that impressive. But actually, it's about kind of, and it's different for different people and also the situation that you and your horse are in. I think I remember you said to me, okay, actually the starting place is actually thinking short term, medium term and long term about what you and your horse want to do together. But that long term informs your short term. So, and that really sets you up for being well invested in terms of knowing, okay, I might not, sometimes I have this, I think, yeah, it doesn't really look very impressive. She can just stand there while I walk away for a bit and then I can come back and feed her. That doesn't look like, all, you know, and when you're also as well, there are people that I have met which are using clicker training, which is amazing, or they're using positive reinforcement, perhaps without really realizing it. You know, there is this kind of then sense of sort of how positive reinforcement is kind of promoted within an animal training environment that is dominated by tradition. And a lot of those traditional methods, like I say, are not even negative reinforcement, they're actually punishment. So you kind of sometimes think, oh, am I doing a disservice here by not having a trot round with a target? And, you know,
and I think it's, we should explain just very, very briefly that you have a horse who needs to lose weight because she's comfortable, a native who finds food lands on her hips, and you know, some of us humans have the same problem, but you've had that balance to get right. Do I keep going with the calmness and keep her relaxed around me and food, or do I put exercise in? And I think that's a very important thing that, you know, maybe we could get across to people, that you will come across those things, and sometimes you might have to keep going with some of the techniques that you're less attracted to, just to give that horse the right life and the right potential to lose weight. You've been quite lucky in a way, in that you've been trying to manage that in a way by choosing a place for Bree to live that suits the weight loss. But that's not going to be the same for everybody. So I think it's really important that anyone listening doesn't feel, oh, I can't do positive reinforcement because I can't do it all the time and I need to, you know, keep exercising my horse. And, you know, do reach out to people like Claire. Go look at Claire's page, you know, Kindly Equine, because there are people out there that can help you through those thought processes. And you're a deep thinker, but some people just, they decide and they do it, and they're out in the field the next day doing it. And yeah, for them that works too. Maybe not always for the horse. So you occasionally, like when we've gone through something, you've gone to such great depths, it's really touching. I remember you sending me kind of like a visual board of how things were going to go, because we work on lots of plans and things, and for you it helps you to see it really in pictures and environments that you're going to find yourself in. So that's very different to some people who would maybe just read a book and take it all in and then go and apply it. So I think it's really important to say, not only find someone to help you, whether that's online or in person, but find, or just a buddy who does it as well, who you can say, oh, this is driving me mad and I don't know what's happening here. But also to accept that you might learn very differently, just as your horse does, and that you might need to have a little bit of a wider thought process and things like, you know, drawing pictures and looking at your plans that way would be different for some people. So and to embrace that rather than think, oh, I don't fit in with this community. Well, yeah, you do. You can be anywhere you like.
Absolutely. And I think finding ways that work for you is so important. And the thing that I have reflected on, and I'm certainly going to be reflecting on going forwards with myself and Bree, is how important it is to be training yourself as well. And that's where I'm so lucky in that I've hit a brilliant balance when we work together, because it's a balance of like there is nerdiness but there's also fun, there's also you know, it's not and so I think I've found that, and that's where it's been really, really good to know that I've got a kind of constant and kind of mentor, is that I can be reminded of, are we still enjoying this? And that is just so important. And then just thinking as well about what planning is something that, there's some days where I love it, and then I have other days where, you know, I've created like, oh, the best plan ever. And then Bri is like, that plan doesn't really suit me. So
I don't like that plan. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's fine. Back to the drawing board. And I have to try and not take it personally and understand that I can.
That's a fabulous point, really. You know, for the beginner trainer, we say, go and plan, write your plans, practice. And then that first time you get out there and they go, actually, you don't impress me at all with your food. Go away. So be that, you have to take the knocks. And with positive reinforcement, that shows up. Yeah. Whereas if you're going out and just tapping your horse or the ground by your horse with a whip and trying to make them go, they might pull a face and, oh, okay, I'll do it. But you tend to ride over those emotions that you feel when your horse doesn't want to do it, and you don't notice your horse showing them. But with positive reinforcement, it can be, you just have to say, I'm stopping. And that's hard for a new person to the
system of training.
Yeah.
So incredibly difficult. I think, being able to just put food on the floor and get out. Yeah. And that is so hard to do, particularly as well when you're doing something that is, although obviously there's more and more positive reinforcement horse training happening than ever before, there's still a lot of people where through what, you know, whatever kind of constraints or, you know, and just you know, fate will have it that maybe you'll never come across another person that is using this, so you might feel quite alone, so you can feel like you're kind of swimming against such a tidal wave of tradition. And there are places where I think as well tradition can then sometimes get like a bad rep, and again it's really important, I think, to actually pull apart the different things of what you're seeing, because there can also be elements of I think it's really a huge part of understanding and sort of choosing what elements of learning theory and what training you're going to bring into your horse's life. Without an understanding of tradition, you couldn't actually make really positive welfare choices. And it's also is part of understanding this incredible you know, gift that they give to us in being willing to cooperate with us if we are asking them to, you know, let us sit on their backs, or whether they're, you know, whether they're one of the heavy horses that is steeped in tradition in terms of actually giving the whole of the human race an opportunity to develop this developed world. It wouldn't have come without horses being able to pull carts. Yeah. It's incredibly important. And so there's elements of it that are also really, really important. I think, you know, obviously traditional methods is often talked about in a very negative way by those of us that perhaps aren't using them. And all of that actually does have a place. But I think it's really hard with that kind of, you feel that weight on your shoulders, which can make you keep going and pushing through in a particularly a session if you're using food or if you're using scratches. I mean, with Bri, I've started to learn more for some of the signs where scratching is something for her where it can be incredibly, incredibly enjoyable and positive, but it can be so enjoyable that it's also can actually sometimes be quite energy, high energy in certain places. So equally, that can then, if you don't get quite the place that's right for her, and if I haven't taken the time to just have a good old scratch session, seeing where's, if I've gone straight in with, oh, yeah, well, you really liked to scratch here the other day,
yeah,
you can then be in a situation where, I mean, Bree is very, I'm very lucky in a way that she communicates very effectively. Usually she turns to me with the ears pinned and I go, yeah, no, I'm sorry, I've got it wrong. Or I've been just pushing with something that I think you should enjoy. You know, I think it should be this way.
That's another one, isn't it? It's getting, as a beginner, it's getting out of that mindset of what I think you should be reinforcing. I've been doing a series of videoing with a lovely client, Annie, and her horse, Tommy, on clippers, because he got very, very reactive again to the sound and the clippers coming towards him. And we noticed the other day, when she's now close up with him, giving him food for a certain amount of tolerance of noise, that he would suddenly turn his bum around and say, actually, can you scratch this bit rather than have the food? You know, but that's happened maybe because of the time of year. You know, horses are a lot itchier at the moment. We've had some dry, sunnier weather. And, you know, so that it's, but it is hard as a newbie to all this stuff. And if anyone's just out there thinking, oh, this sounds even more complicated now, I've got to know what, you know, what my horse wants. But the level it gives you of interaction with your horse, I think, way outweighs the downside of having to work through all this.
Yeah, and I think as well, sometimes you just have to accept that some of the best things in life are not easy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's kind of like you can sort of push against things as much as you want. And I know as well with Bree, obviously we'd already met because I had started off with a lone horse. But Bree, I don't like terming it this way, but unfortunately I do sometimes tend to sort of introduce her as, there are some behavioural issues, which is, so it's not even a behavioural issue. I mean, it's the kind of thing where we've learned together a lot, and you really guided me, and we were talking about this before we started recording, about it's different environments can, all behaviour comes out of the environment. So, and you are part of that environment as a trainer or an owner, or, you know, simply someone just watching, is it's all the environment. So Bree can have situations where for whatever reason, and I haven't been able to fully understand them yet, and that's really where just being like, you know, pretending you are just a scientist and just watching and just observing and just taking note of things, so that you start to see patterns. She can sometimes go over threshold, and she can go over threshold. A trigger sometimes for that can be if she's being walked around and there's other horses around, and her go-to can be, she's, bless her, she's at the moment a big girl, but also she's your typical stocky cob anyway, so even once she's lost weight, she's a strong girl. So if she wants to, then fair play, she can go quite sensibly, I'm removing myself from this situation. So she can sometimes drag you a little bit along with her. So she's, and I didn't have any of that with the horse that I loaned. And again, I do think, I wonder as well, perhaps in future, when people come to this as beginners, they'll be perhaps in a slightly different situation to what many of us are in now. Sometimes you come to it as a beginner because you have to, because other things haven't worked. So often you are coming to it because there is a, in inverted commas, problem behavior, which is how we talk about it. And then, oh, the pressure can just be so difficult. And then someone sort of saying to you, you know, oh, actually, you've got to think about this and you've got to think about this. And I can totally understand why. And I have my moments when I was starting out where I thought, you know, I've got a Pirelli book and I've got a carrot stick and I got the pressure halter, and there's just the six games.
Yeah, and I could just go out and do that, and I could go to clinics and be with other people doing it, so I can see how the next game goes and the next level goes. And you know, I think we're missing that, and I do think it's something that we want to try eventually to address at Understand Horses, because there isn't any, when I say formal, I don't mean, you know, BHS sort of standard or style stuff, but you know, there aren't many places you can go to learn these techniques on no. horses. You know, I've been and helped at Nine Acres. Hazel Heaton runs a super place there, and Hazel, I know in the future, is going to offer, I'm pretty sure, some of her own horses in the school there for people to learn. And that is, if you're that end of the country, it's a fantastic thing to do. But it's rare.
I might move there.
Yeah. It's a lovely place, and property is very reasonable. might sink if we all go to Norfolk. So I think going forwards, more of these things will happen. You know, I know Rachel Beddingfield has her place in Spain, which at the moment obviously is not an accessible thing, but it, you know, we will come out of lockdown and people will be able to get together and do these things. But I love it. You know, if I've got a clinic with people, or I prefer to call them workshops, so that people understand that they're actually working on themselves as well as working with a horse. Clinics tend to be bring your horse, have an hour, go home. And I like people to be there for, you know, a whole day and learn everything. And, you know, having those tabletop games where you can see how hard it is as a learner when your teacher is not setting up your environment beautifully for you. And then do have some sessions with, you know, some calm horses who actually know what's happening, I think would be amazing. But we're a long way off that, and riding schools have a bad setup really in the UK, so I don't see many people rushing out to set up for clicker training positive reinforcement centers. But I would love it if people did. I think it would be an amazing thing.
It would be. And clicker training is something as well that as children, if I had gone, you know, my experience of horses when I was young was falling off this out of control, but completely lovely and completely not his fault, racehorse, and still loving it so much that I would go back every week in order to basically repeat this, which I think about it now in terms of learning theory, and I think, what on earth was reinforcing about that?
It's fascinating. You just loved horses. I did. And you could bear that amount of punishment, the pain of falling off, the embarrassment of falling off, whatever. You could stand that, because you know it's when we have those motivators working, isn't it? They might take the shine off or put a bit more shine on, but ultimately the true reinforcer was horses.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, I saw that with Hazel, you know, that there were kids coming to her clicker club, I think she calls it, on a Saturday morning and not getting to ride. You know, no riding would be involved at all. These kids are working out a little bit of classroom and a bit with the ponies, how to appreciate what a pony really is and why they do things that they do. And I think her fallout rate from turning herself from a riding school into doing the clicker club, she used to do pony club as such, you know, I think her fallout was minimal considering how different it was. And yeah, those kids might be able to sit on the pony in future, but it's important they're going and learning. And I think you would have loved that. They're not having to ride necessarily. They're learning, why does that horse pin its ears back at my pony when I go up to my pony? Why does this happen or that happen? And fabulous environment.
No, I would have absolutely loved that. And my mother would have been a lot less terrified which would have been really, really good. And just seeing as well, I think it is, I mean, I've had some people say to me since owning Bree, do you ride her? And when I say no, they say, well, why do you have her?
Yeah, why do you have a horse you don't ride?
And, you know, the amount of time that I will then actually not really be truthful because I'm embarrassed.
Yeah.
Because I feel that I'm not normal. And wouldn't it just be wonderful if, I mean, children as well. I mean, it's so fantastic. Any opportunities where kids are working with animals is brilliant because they don't come with the same baggage that we come with as adults. Also as well, they are children observe things without necessarily anthropomorphizing. They can much more easily accept things for how they are. Because it's as we go through life that we build up sort of storytelling in our minds, which is all part of, it's part of the society we live in. But for children to be able to have the opportunity to engage with horses without riding them would be amazing, because there's a horse that I had the pleasure of meeting recently, who is a lovely horse, and she is being she's pregnant. She's had a few foals before, and a big reason that she is having these foals is because they want the foals for the temperament, because she is a good kid's pony. She's very very tolerant. And that, I just think that's really sad. Really sad, actually, that we are only able to look at what a horse can do for a person rather than what a person can do to help a horse.
Oh, that's amazing. I love, and I'm going to say, because I've just looked at the clock and we've been jabbering for ages.
Not surprised.
I love it. We always do, which is lovely. And I hope people feel that it just does come from the heart, and it is just, you know, it's just us chatting, and I have no editing job to do at all. So that's fantastic as well. So, yeah, I think maybe if we leave the main thrust a bit there and say that ask what can you do for your horse in every way before you ask what they can do for you, because then when you do, the benefits they give you are just enormous, aren't they? You know,
absolutely. And that is setting up a relationship as well for the long term, which then so many of the ins and outs of training and what you're trying to kind of grapple with as a beginner, they iron themselves out in time. But setting yourself up with that intention, I just think is hopefully as well really reinforcing for people, because you start to actually, you know, more and more I found that I'm now actually proud to talk about what I do with Bree, rather than that I have to in some way justify why. I said to the vet the other day, I said, she, you know, effectively she's just a big outdoor pet. But what's wrong with that? She may not always be that. There may be other things that we do together. Things change over time. But there really is, you know, our poor horses, they are sort of stuck in being somewhere between this sort of, like, you know, sports commodity and somewhere between a pet. And they end up sometimes a little bit, it's a bit muddled and a bit confused. And the essence of any choice we make around training surely has to start from knowing what that animal is to us. And I think we are in a time now where we've come a lot further in terms of, even though it's only a little blip in terms of the evolution of the horse, it's really tiny, but within that it's changed so much, and we are now in a place where I think we should be able to say, what can we do for our horses, as opposed to what is their purpose for us? I just think it's a bit outdated now, really.
I think it's fantastic, it really is. So I'm going to finish by asking you, I know you mentioned, I know we've spoken about the book before, Clicker Training Cats was your first book really that got you looking at all this. Is there anything else that we can recommend to somebody starting out that you would say, yeah, why don't you pick up a copy of that? Or why don't you take a look at that person's videos or whatever? Let's give somebody a bump up for having a great book or...
Definitely. So Jessica Gonzalez, who's written, I never know if it's Empowered Equines or Empowering Equines. I'm not sure.
I think it's Empowered Equines.
I think it is.
You can find her on Facebook and on YouTube, and she has a very in-depth book.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So her book as well, I really like it because, again, it has lots of pictures. I do spend my time, and it's important to kind of go down the finding the kind of evidence-based things for yourself. So, you know, I'm not, I do print out journal articles and whatnot, but they are hard work. It's lovely to just, it's a really good, I found it really good example of just kind of actually, this can be a pathway with your horse. And also, there's a really lovely video on YouTube that Jessica has done with some beautiful music from the film How to Train Your Dragon. It's just a lovely song. It's just called Clicker Trained Riding. Yeah. And it's just young kids working with her rescue ponies and just seeing that there is so much fun that can be had in a school, an arena where, for me, the only thing I'd experienced was literally someone shouting at me from the middle while I tried to get my horse to go around in circles.
Yeah.
To see then there's so much you can do, I think that is really, really lovely. And then I think, you see, I didn't really get a huge amount further before I got in contact with you. So then for me, I've got a lot of books on my bookshelf. I've got some that I haven't finished. The connection training book is lovely, really nice, but it's more in depth, which is really, really important. But I love Jessica's book because it's also got the key elements about looking at ethology that inform what you're choosing to do with your horse. I think that one is really, really lovely. But I have got Alexandra Curlin's book on my reading list, I think, as well. That's really interesting.
I think the only thing I'd say about Alex Curlin is to go for the most recent books. I know she's definitely updated some of her great books because things move and they're probably over 20 years old now. So, you know, look for her current work or updated books. It can be tempting on Amazon to pick up an old edition, and there are some that I think that is absolutely fine. If you look at something like Paul Chance's Learning and Behavior, go for a couple of editions back because the changes are so few that it's just not worth worrying about. But those books of Alex, she's updating. Alex is another one who's really generous and has quite a lot of online free written work that people can go look at too.
Definitely. I've also been trying to sort of, I don't want to say expand my horizons as such, but there's some really, I've been looking a lot more, like I do look at Karen Pryor a lot, and then also just again learning about dogs is a really, really good one. There's a really good podcast about dogs, and it's about something about drinking out the toilet.
Yeah, that's Hannah Branigan's Drinking from the Toilet. Hannah's great, very super fast presenter, and you learn a lot in a short space of time, and I think also sends you off places to think, oh, how can I apply that to horses? And if people think, hang on, you're telling me about dog things, because I always tell people, buy don't shoot the dog first, because it tells you about the whole, very simply, about the whole procedure and the whole ethos of it, and makes you think a bit, and it's very cheap, might as well buy that and get started. But often these nerdy dog people are fantastic for shoving you off somewhere and thinking, I need to find out whether this could work for a horse. So
absolutely, and really good for just digging into learning theory and just really understanding things. And then if you're in a situation where you can, then if you've got a mentor and a trainer that's been working with horses, then you can say, would this work? And you can then have some guidance on, is this something that's worth trying?
Yeah.
And then you have the opportunity that once you've tried it, you've got someone to reflect with,
yeah,
on what went well, what didn't go well, so that, yeah, you're constantly learning and improving, and therefore, yeah, your horse is learning more, which is a really good thing.
Yeah, that's fantastic, Claire. Thank you so much for hopping on the podcast this afternoon. Yeah, it'll be up and out in the next few days. So I look forward to everyone else hearing about things and how you feel about starting out. And I think it'll be really helpful for them. So thank you so much, as always. And we'll speak again soon, because we didn't get to half of the stuff we were going to talk about.
No, we didn't.
We'll do it again. We'll do it again soon. So it's lovely. Thanks, Claire. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Do get in touch if you have questions or suggestions for future podcasts. You can follow the podcast on its Facebook page, Lead a Horse to Water. And I'm now able to consider travelling again for workshops and clinics, obviously COVID restrictions in place. If you'd like to host an event, drop me a message. Bye.